Welcome to Babbittville. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you every Sunday night by California 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands up the coastline from Del Mar to Encinitas and back, coming up on Sunday, February 15th. That's cal1020.com, Core Clothing, the best in women's activewear, the Challenged Athletes Foundation, and of course, you can check out interviews on Babbittville on iTunes. Our next guest, the CEO of the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, executive producer of Dolphin Tale 2, and longtime friend, Mr. David Yates. David, how the heck are you?
Bob, I'm doing great, my friend. Great to talk to you.
Wonderful. So, David, when you came on at Ironman, I mean, what was your athletic background to when you took the job at Ironman? And when you started out at Ironman, you weren't CEO of Ironman. You were in the accounting department?
Well, I was actually, in my prior life, as I call it, I was a CPA. So I was doing CPA work and so on. And I was, I was a runner, ran in college, competitive runner, and the triathlon lifestyle was just a great, great lifestyle. So very tangential to what I grew up being as a runner. But I was basically, when we bought Ironman, I was second in command, and I was to another gentleman, David Voth. And I was, prior to that, right before that, I was basically an accountant / CPA. So people see me today, they go, how the heck were you an accountant? I said, well, I was.
And it's funny, because when you were with Dr. Gill's group, at that point, when you started there, they hadn't bought Ironman yet, right?
Correct. I was there as a CPA / internal auditor for a bunch of the companies there, and that's how we started. And we eventually, about a year after that, kind of rolled into the Ironman idea. Dr. Gill's was a longtime Ironman athlete. We all loved the event. It came up for sale. We said, you know what, let's give it a shot. We put in a bid. We actually lost it the first time.
Oh, really?
Going way back. We actually, in 1988, we put in a bid. We're told we had it the last minute. A group came in and got it from underneath us. But that deal eventually unwound, and Valerie Silk, of course, came back to us, and then we actually bought it the second time around.
Interesting. And so when you bought it, at that point, there was Ironman in Hawaii, in Kona, and there was some licensed events internationally, but there was no other events in the U.S. How many events there were at that time?
Well, no, there were only 5 international races and just a number of domestic races that weren't Ironman licensed at all. They were just kind of Ironman qualifying events. So the whole goal was, and obviously even after I left, Lou Friedland did a great, great job of taking – my goal really was to kind of stabilize the company.
Right.
It was in trouble back then, and it just wasn't doing well, and we had to kind of stabilize the company. And then eventually I launched the brand from the brand perspective. So I put together a brand campaign, put together the licensing aspect, kind of built off the Timex license, and we'll use it as a way to kind of build the brand and really go mass market with it. We were on ABC back in the 80s.
Right.
Wild World of Sports, and it was basically, ABC did the show, produced it, and it was pretty kind of the, what I call the freak show part of Iron Man, all the crawling in the ditches kind of stuff.
Right.
And we switched to NBC. Dick Emerson gave us a package, privately packaged deal on NBC in 91 that allowed us to have 2 2-hour shows a year. Produced the way we wanted the event to be shown. That kind of blew up the brand around the world to make it kind of an inspirational, wannabe type sport. And our goal always was, from day one that I laid out, was I want anybody who watches any of our TV shows, wherever they are, in any country, whatever the lifestyle is, to feel like, if I wanted to, I could do this race.
Yeah, you didn't want it to look like something that you had to be an uber athlete to do.
Exactly, because that's not the essence of what it was about, the whole event. So that's what we tried to accomplish and switching to NBC. And we're still on NBC today, and they've done a great job over the years. So.
Well, it was interesting. When it was on Wide World of Sports, you'd have, you'd have cliff diving, you'd have barrel jumping, and then it would be 20 minutes on the Ironman.
Exactly.
Right? And you'd see Julie Moss crawling across the line, which was awesome, but you really didn't get the essence of the whole race and what it was that led her to crawl across the line and why it meant so much to her to get there.
Yes, Bob, you're right on. You hit it on the head. It was all about the essence. And what it allowed us to do was, and Dick Ebersol really pioneered this with the Olympic Games back in the 90s, was really telling the stories of the athletes. It's why are they there? What brought them there? What are they over? Everybody that does the Ironman race is there for a reason. And not just to do a race. They have some life challenge they're overcoming, or they're running for their daughter or son who's sick, whatever it is. And, Bob, you know all these stories. That's the essence. It's not... crossing the finish line is almost the easy part. It's getting there. It's the journey of why you're doing it. And that's what NBC allowed us to do. And that was really what we tried to blow up and really get that essence out there. So people understood these are real people in your neighborhood, and here's what this event means to them in their life.
Well, and what I always love is, you know, the elite athletes are great, but I don't think the average person at home watching on television can relate to some guy with a resting heart rate of 30 who's jogging across the finish line like it's no big deal in 8 hours and 4 minutes. But they can
rule. I use that exact example thousands of times. Here's an example I use.
Yeah.
That the average person cannot relate to the top athletes, you know, the Dave Scotts. Back in the 90s, the guys we loved dearly, great athletes, the Mark Allens, Paul Levy Frazier's, they're amazing athletes. But, you know, I have a hard time maybe relating to that as much as the lady who lives on a farm with 3 kids in Wisconsin that does this as a way to really overcome something in her life. So telling those hometown stories and the average person stories that anybody can relate to, that's what we tried to accomplish back then. So
yeah, well, and you know, I always use the example of here's Dick and Rick Hoyt. Average person home can relate to what a father would do for his son. That's universal. You know,
that's right.
They would do exactly the same thing if they were in that predicament, if they had the opportunity.
Exactly right. You hit it on the head. Absolutely.
So, David, one of the other things that we worked together on that was wonderful and it certainly changed the face of Ironman and endurance sports was in 94, 95 when wheelchair athletes wanted to participate in the Ironman.
Yep.
And
yep.
I remember
yep.
you and I had discussions like, well, wait, are we opening up Pandora's box if we're having somebody use a hand cycle for the bike and a racing chair for the run, if somebody doesn't swim and wants to windsurf to swim, how do we, so it was like creating rules so that you could allow people with challenges, with disabilities to come and participate, but have rules so that they had to make all the cutoff times just in creating a level playing field for everybody in the race.
That's right. Yeah, what happened is, you're right on, and frankly, one of the things I enjoyed the most in my life was working on that particular project, and you're right, you and I talked for many, many hours about this. It was a big discussion piece, and what I wanted Ironman to do, I wanted Ironman to lead on the issue, not lag.
Yes.
So back in 93, 94, we put together some ideas, and we worked with, obviously the federations with some ideas about this, to kind of lead on how can we go out and develop this right now to make, because Ironman, if it's about anything, it's about overcoming. So how can we not allow a John McLean to race? You know,
right.
For example, we can't not let that happen. So how do we do it in an organized, smart way? So we started drawing out some concepts and ideas, literally from scratch about, okay, what are the different categories? How do we do this? How do we do that? And I remember working with Clinda Bruwek way back in 20 years ago about developing ideas, which kind of led to, and I never forget, I mean, one of the most emotional experiences I've ever had in my life was, I mentioned John McLean, dear friend of yours, dear friend of mine, I saw him 2 months ago, and when he came out and did the race the way he did, and you know what was so great about guys like John that have him, John obviously in the wheelchair,
is
just the attitude he has, and guys like him have. They've been through an incredible life struggle. He's the most positive guy I know. So, you know, going out and developing that was just a labor of love, and I'm just glad we started that way.
Wow, and the cool part was, remember, he didn't make the bike cutoff the first year.
That's right.
The second year, he didn't make the bike cutoff time, and but they let him, I think the idea was, hey, let's see if someone can do this. So he was allowed to go out and do the run course in his racing chair, and obviously didn't have a problem finishing the race. Gets a finisher's medal, and his brother was like, John, you can't keep that. You didn't make the cutoff times.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Then he came back the following year, made the cutoff times, and then the following year, Carlos Moleta went sub-11 hours, which showed that, okay, once somebody like Roger Bannister breaking a four-minute mile, once John McLean showed it was possible, then things went to another level.
Exactly. And by the way, let me just reflect back on something else we did that was tangential to that. That was, I never forget the first year you did CAF.
Yep.
I remember you calling me saying, Dave, I got a race. I need a couple of slots. I know you don't do this, but can you give me 2 slots? So I'm like, well, what is this race you're talking about? and you gave me the vision. This was 91, was it?
It was when McLaren got hurt in 92, 93, right around that, yeah.
And you called me and said, hey, listen, Dave, this is a great, I want to build up a Challenge
Charity
Foundation concept, and if you can give me a couple of slots, I'll help build the race. And I'm like, you know, I don't normally do this, but I believe in Bob Babbitt, so I'm going to do it. So, and look what you've done since then. So, you go back. And by the way, Dolphin Tail 2 premiere. You and I were both there. We could talk about it in a second.
Yes.
CAF was there. CAF was there at Dolphin Tail premiere also. But just the fact that you had the vision for this, just when we're developing stuff at Ironman, was, and look where it's blown, and how neat is it to see the athletes competing now with all types of issues that 20 years ago had no chance even thinking of that.
Right. Well, and the cool thing is, David, is the fact that you were open to it. You know what? And they were, you were open to when we started the Hall of Fame for Ironman at the Competitor Awards. And you know, we worked together to create some pretty cool things over time. And speaking of cool things you've created, after you leave Ironman, you go to the Clearwater Marine Aquarium. And talk a little bit about what that place was like when you got there.
Well, here's what happened is we raised our kid. It's a small facility in Clearwater Beach, Florida, and it's in a very old building. It's a marine life rescue center, and we raised our kids coming there, so we knew about it. Kind of small, kind of old, beat up. It's very, and I was asked to do a turnaround by the board of the aquarium. I thought, you know what? I want to do something nice for the community. So the goal was to come there, spend a year, do a turnaround, pass it on to somebody else. Well, long story short, I took the job, and yeah, it was in serious trouble. It was 3 months away from closing down, and all kinds. I mean, it was very dysfunctional in every aspect, but, and it wasn't because of the mission, it just wasn't managed quite as well as it could have been. But anyway, so I got there and I realized, wow, this is going to be a problem. But then, as I'm there, we had rescued Winter at that exact same, Winter and I arrived at almost the exact same time, providentially. It's like we literally arrived within weeks of each other. And I saw her story, Bob, and I turned to my staff and said, wow. This is what she's doing right now. If we smart about how we handle this story, it can, number one, help us really raise up CMA out of the ashes, but also inspire millions of kids around the world. So from day one, we could see her story was going to do that, Bob.
And Winter was basically had lost her tail.
Correct. She was rescued, caught in a crab trap rope, and the rope had caught around her body in a number of places, including the tail fluke, and it cut off the tail, the blood flow around the tail fluke, and we got her. Her tail was still on, but it gradually came off over the next 2 weeks. So then we had a very sick dolphin that probably shouldn't have survived anyway against all odds, and now it has lost its tail. So this dolphin just went through. We're watching this going, my gosh. So the whole world has kind of seen her story now, and we got to see it in firsthand. So watching her overcome her issues, and she was to swim in a brand new way, and we eventually developed a prosthetic tail working with Hanger Clinic, our good friends Kevin Carroll, and who you know, and Dan Stremska.
Yep.
So it just became this fascinating story, and I eventually put it out to the media and just mushroomed it around the world. There's a lot of bad news out there, and this is just a great good news inspirational story.
So from your years of seeing amputee athletes like Jim McLaren and guys like that racing in Kona, did that connect the dots for you when you said, okay, I got to get a prosthetic tail for this dolphin?
100%. I immediately knew. I mean, listen, it was almost like Groundhog's Day for me, Bob, because when Winter's story and what her essence is, which is overcoming nature, perseverance, not giving up, is exactly what Ironman's about. So I'm literally going, my goodness, I'm doing now 10 years later what I did back in the 90s. It's the same story, just in a different way. And when it comes around to prosthetics, so back in the 90s, as you and I talked about, you and I kind of tried to lead a little bit on how to make sure we could get athletes, challenge athletes in events and lead a more active lifestyle. Now I'm doing the same thing with a dolphin, but also knowing that this might have some human applications to it. And that's been the exciting part, Bob, is beyond helping Winter, there's a gel that was developed by Hanger Clinic, who's our partner in this, that was made for Winter to kind of go around her skin to protect her skin, that we found out by accident people can use that. So now there's hundreds of prosthetic patients, if not thousands, around the country and the world using a gel called Winter's Gel as a liner to make their prosthetic arms and legs more comfortable. And we developed it for Winter. How cool is that?
I love that. So in terms of the change, when you're promoting Winter and obviously you're getting a lot of people coming to the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, how did the movie come out of that? The first movie.
What happened is I was actually talking when I started at the aquarium. I had three goals for Winter Story from the promotional side. I wanted to have a book, which I've already done a number of books. I wanted to have a documentary. I've already produced two documentaries. I wanted to have a major motion picture. You know, why not think? Why not dream big? Right.
Exactly.
So I was talking to a group in New York that is a production major production company, and at that same time, I put Winter Story off the media in 2006, and Bob, it became the world's biggest animal media story of all time. Within 2 years, we had, for example, 5 Today Show segments, 3 CBS Early Show segments, Good Morning America, Nightly News, CNN, Oprah, every major newspaper in the country. We were in the National Newspaper of India, CNN. It just went everywhere.
Yeah.
It just mushroomed because it's such a great story. And from that, my partners at Alcon Entertainment in Hollywood saw one of my Today Show pieces. A dear friend named Richard Ingber, who's the head of media at Alcon now, saw that, called us up and said, listen, we think it's a great major motion picture. Let's talk. So they, and of course, they made the movie called The Blind Side.
Yes, yeah.
As an example. So they called me up, and so it came from, I put the media out, they saw it, we called up, and the rest is history.
Well, and then when you get people like Harry Connick Jr., Ashley Judd, Kris Kristofferson, Morgan Freeman, that helps to make a movie special.
Oh, that was that helped out a little bit.
But now, were you executive producer on that first film?
I was a co-producer on the first movie, exec producer on the second. I basically, on the second, I was involved from day one on both movies, of course. But on the second one, I had to actually come up with the original story ideas because there wasn't a planned sequel. There was
right.
no sequel. It wasn't what it was. So I spent 6 months developing what's called a treatment synopsis that I sent out to Andrew Koso, who you know, and Broderick Johnson.
Yep.
The guys, here's my idea for second movie. And what do you think? That's what started all. So I was involved at day one from all the movies. But the second one is even more special to me because it really shouldn't have happened. There's never been, Bob, we don't believe in Hollywood history, there's never been a sequel to a movie based on real life. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah, because the story's over, right? You tell the story. It's like you don't have Rudy 2. Rudy plays in the last game, and it's done.
Exactly. Well, like in Alcon's case, with their huge success of The Blind Side, Andrew said, Dave, we can't have a sequel. Even though it did $255 million box office, and Sandra Bullock won the Academy Award for a role in that, you know, there's just not a sequel. So it was totally unexpected. But listen, when you rescue marine life and work with the kids the way we do, you just have a lot of good stories. So I wrote it up, I sent it out to them, and you know, it led to Dolphin Tale 2. And by the way, we think it's a great, great, great. All the reviews have come back very, very strong. It's a great movie.
Well, it is a great movie. I saw it on Sunday. We were there for the blue carpet, and you could really tell that Harry Connick Jr. and the actors in it really, really fell in love with the whole concept. Right, they really love what you guys do down there at CMA.
Yes, yeah. But listen, the bottom line is, it is this whole project, the whole movie's just been a great collaborative effort, and it's just been inspiring. Bob, you saw the kids there,
yeah,
CAF kids there, and I had two particular kids I let walk with me on the blue, the red carpet, which is blue for being water, of course.
Right,
and one of them was a young girl that I challenged a year ago. She has PFFD. Which means her left foot is where her left knee is, and she's had leg lengthening surgeries, and her challenge was to learn to walk again. So I challenged her a year ago. I said, listen, I said, Ellie, and she's about 10 years old from Utah, I said, if you will work hard learning how to walk again this year, you'll get to walk with me on the red carpet.
Wow.
And I gave her that challenge, and she worked all year very hard, and she was there in a beautiful gown dress, and got to walk with me. And there's a second girl there. And Bob, I have 10,000 stories like this and what's happened in the aftermath of the Dolphin Tale with kids. But there's another young girl who's on the kidney liver transplant list right now. She has a disease called NMA. She doesn't eat or drink very well. Her organs are dying. She's 19, but she's mentally about a 12 or 13-year-old. And one of her issues, she doesn't drink. And I said, listen, if you work hard and you drink the way you're supposed to all year, and you eat and do all things your doctors say, you're going to get to go with me in your wheelchair on the red carpet. She was there also. So,
I love
that. That really is the essence of what this thing is all about.
Well, and so then you're in a position, and you know, one of the things we talked about the other day, the difference between a CMA and a SeaWorld, your job is to rescue, rehab, and release. And
correct.
So when you had, I think it was Mandy, you had a dolphin that you guys rescued. And
right.
had skin damage, and you know, and that dolphin would have been perfect to put with Winter. And you know, and talk a little bit about the numbers, how CMA changed in terms of, you used to get what, 40,000 people a year at $5 a person, and then it became what, 80,000 people a month at $20 a person, something
well,
along that list.
Yeah, here's what happened: is yeah, the obviously the movies, our attendance in 2006 was annually was 78,000. So 78,000 for a full year. Our attendance the year after the movie came out was 750,000.
Oh, my God.
So it grew quite a lot. But what it allowed us to do is, and getting what you mentioned about Mandy and rescue, it allowed us really to expand our rescue, rehab, and release work. So our mission is as follows, and we're very unique in this sense. We have four parts to our, we're a nonprofit. The first part is what we call the three R's. It's rescue, rehab, and release. So our goal is to rescue and life, rehabilitate them if they need, whatever that issue is, and get them back in the wild. If they won't survive for some reason back in the wild, then they're maintained at CMA. But our first goal is always to get them well, get it. We're a hospital in that sense.
Right.
Get them back in the wild again. We're also involved in environmental education, promoting the conservation, marine life issues. And then we're involved in research and then in bringing inspiring moments. So what you see in Dolphin Tail 2 is the whole essence of Dolphin Tail 2 is about rescue, rehab, and release. That's the message. That's the essence. We still have the inspirational things going on, our work with kids, but the whole essence really is the core part of our mission, which is how we rescue marine life, how we rehabilitate, what that process involves, all the decisions you have to make, and then actually releasing them back in the wild as long as they'll survive. If they have some reason why they can't survive, for example, in Winter's case, she wouldn't survive more than 12 hours out in the wild.
No, without a fin, without a tail, yeah.
Didn't have a tail. We got her when she was very young. She never learned her life skills from her mom. Didn't know how to hunt, stay away from prey, and so on. But as long as they can get, we can get her back in the ocean. That's the goal, and that's what you saw us do with both Mandy the dolphin and Dolphin Tail too, but also one of our turtles. A lot of our rehab work is turtles, even more so than dolphins. And these are sea turtles that are endangered species. They get hit by boats. They get caught in fishing lines. So you see a lot of real-life elements in Dolphin Tail, too, of things that actually happen at the aquarium, and those are a couple of them.
Well, and then I think you mentioned that during the wrap party for Dolphin Tail 1, for Dolphin Tail, all of a sudden, here comes hope. Here comes this little dolphin that had some issues, and you guys brought her in, and that ended up changing everything.
Rob, people don't believe me when I tell this story. I'll do it briefly, but they tell me I'm lying through my teeth when I tell it, but this is what happened. We planned, Dolphin Tail was about a four-year project, and just so happened, the last day of filming was Saturday, December 11th, 2010. So after 4 years, that was our last day of filming. We planned what's called a wrap party that night at the restaurant just next to the aquarium. And the wrap party is kind of like a going-away party for the cast and crew.
Right.
So at 4 o'clock, I go home to change clothes at 4 o'clock for the party. At 5 o'clock, I get a call from Bob Ingerman, my co-producer, saying, Dave, we got the last shot. Filming is wrapped with Doma Dolphin Tail. So we're both like, woohoo, it's done, right?
Yep.
We're excited. That's at 5 o'clock. At 5:10, I get a call from my animal care staff saying, hey, Dave, there's a dolphin being rescued on the east coast of Florida. If it survives, they're going to bring it here for rehabilitation. It's one of our partner rescue teams. So I said, well, great, let's get ready just in case. But the dolphin wasn't going to arrive alive, Bob. Baby dolphins don't survive rescues like this.
Yeah.
Much less a four-hour drive across the state. But just in case, we got the tanks ready. We got a crane ready to deliver to the next level. Well, long story short, we all go to the party, and Harry Connick's there. We're saying goodbye. Well, and we kind of forget about this, thinking the dolphin probably hadn't made it. Well, 11:15, the van pulls up with the dolphin. We're like, oh, my goodness, did it survive? We open the door up. She's in such bad shape. And this is what you see happen in the movie itself. We grabbed her. We ran her upstairs and got her in the water. We thought she died a couple times. So the cast starts coming over, migrating over to the party, thinking, are we filming a night scene still?
Oh, my God.
Or they think that Yates is pulling a gag. I'm like, no, guys, this is real life. So she literally arrived during the wrap party. And one of my first thoughts that night, Bob, was, I can't believe this is happening now. This actually may be something we can use in a sequel. So that first night, I thought, this maybe, who knows?
Exactly.
So the long story short, she is what makes her important in Winter's life is we had a dolphin named Panama die about a little over a year ago that was Winter's social partner. She was an older dolphin, and if Hope was not here to be Winter's social partner, and young dolphins need social partners, we'd have grave concerns about Winter's mental health and so on. So Hope's importance in Winter's life is critical, and vice versa also. But Hope literally arrived during the wrap party of Dolphin Tail.
Wow.
Now she's the key component of the ending of Dolphin Tail 2.
Wow. And I noticed that at the end of the film when you're showing a lot of challenged athletes who have been down there to meet Winter, and you know, and even in the film where they show the veteran who's like, yeah, I can relate to Winter, who was going through a depression because she lost her partner, right? Lost Panama. So does that happen a lot where you have people come down there and they're motivated by Winter?
Bob, here, let me just say it this way, and I want to be as clear as I can on this. What's happened since Dolphin Talk, and even before, but certainly since it came out, is there? It's become a pilgrimage.
Yeah,
we have thousands and thousands of kids and wounded soldiers Make-A-Wish visits. And I can tell you stories for hours and hours that they've connected to Winter's story, and it literally has turned their life around. And I can give you many examples as you want. I gave you two on the red carpet, but there are thousands. So what you see in Dolphin Tale and Dolphin Tale 2 is trying to depict real life. And as you saw, we closed the last, and I made sure this happened, the last thing you see in the movie is 2.5 minutes of some of the kids we work with at a group called Camp No Limits.
Yep.
And we brought them in, bring them in every year, and they got, these are kids that have special needs. Bob, I know you know who they are. And
yep.
We brought them in. So the last thing you see is real life footage, about 2.5 minutes of some of the real kids we've worked with. But we could show thousands and thousands of kids. But you're right, that is the essence of what it's about. And wounded soldiers, we have wounded soldiers we work with every day that, our battle hardened soldiers that come in really giving up on life. And we watch this little dolphin turn their life around. It's just fascinating. It's always become a pilgrimage in the truest sense of that word.
And it's funny because the pilgrimage you worked with before was over in Kona, Hawaii.
Right.
Isn't that funny?
Exactly.
It is full circle. It's exactly what you're doing before. You're changing lives with, in this case, with two dolphins, before with an event that's magical.
It really is. I've been saying for 8 years now, it really is deja vu. It's like I get to do the same thing all over again. How cool is that?
I love that. So David, are you going to move to Hollywood, get a beret, and go executive producer full-time on us, or are you staying down there at the CMA?
No, I'm going to stay here and keep cutting up fish for my animals. That's pretty much what I'll be doing the next 10 years.
I love that.
But having said this, clearly Winter Story is going to keep going. We'll have more. I love telling stories like this. I love storytelling, inspiring people. We have a lot of things that are out there. So don't be surprised if you keep seeing new projects coming out.
I love it, David. And there's obviously, and we look at it the same way, the stories that come out of Challenge Athletes Foundation and stories that come out of Iron Man, that's what it's all about at the end of the day. The racing and the rest of that is wonderful, but it's the changing lives for the better that really makes a difference.
That is what it is. And Bob, you've been about that your whole life. You've mentored a lot of people, and I love what you do, man.
Hey, David Yates has been our guest, the CEO of Clearwater Marine Aquarium, executive producer of Dolphin Tale 2. Just coming out. You need to go see it. It's a phenomenal film. Bring the kids. Go without the kids. It doesn't matter. The film really, really is wonderful. Again, this is Babbittville Radio. You can check out any of our interviews on iTunes. We're brought to you by 1020, Cal 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands up the coast on February 15th. Core Clothing, the best in women's activewear, and, of course, the Challenge Athletes Foundation. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.